Good morning and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach Ebarb, and today we are getting into probably my favorite period in the Old Testament. We are going to start discussing the historical books. In our previous episodes, we had covered the Pentateuch and we'd looked at Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, and kind of getting an overview of all that happens. And what begins to happen here in the Bible is we have this shift away from the beginning of the nation, the beginning of creation, the founding fathers of Israel, and their overall movement into becoming a nation. And we start to see them and their history as a completed people, okay? And when I say a completed people, I mean that they are officially a nation who is trying to establish itself. And so we get into this very important but very, very, very dreary and disappointing period in their history, because of the fact that they start out so very, very well. And then it's just ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. And so when we talk about the historical books, first of all, you need to know that there are 12 historical books, okay? There are 12 historical books. Joshua to Esther is all of the historical books of the Bible. After that, we get into poetry, dealing with Job and Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and then after that, we get into the major and the minor prophets, okay? So the major and the minor prophets still covers the history of Israel. However, it's going to be dealing with a lot of messianic prophecies, as well as the failure of the people overall to conform to God's rule. And while we're looking at these historical books, I want to just kind of give you some of the major events that are going to occur. First of all, we're going to be taking the Promised Land this time, okay? We're not going to be wandering in the wilderness anymore. We're going to be moving into Canaan and taking Canaan after escaping Egypt and wandering in the wilderness. So that's the first big event. We're going to colonize Canaan. The second one is we're going to go through a period of time under judges, which are these military rulers who step up to the plate, called of God, to free the people from other the people who had taken them over from their captors, even though that was as a result of their own poor decisions that God allowed that to occur. There's going to be this period of mighty military men and women, believe it or not, women. For those of you that think that the Old Testament cuts women out of the equation, you're wrong. Deborah and Barak, and Deborah is by far the one who is much, much more so in charge and in tune with God than Barak. We'll see that in the book of Judges. But so we have this time period where we go from one central leader broken into governors to just these random military leaders throughout the book of Judges. And the book of Judges doesn't necessarily move chronologically, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But when we look into the judges, and then all of a sudden we have this transition to kings, okay? And not kings as in God was to be the king of the people, but rather kings in the sense of we have men who are put on thrones because the nation wants to be like everybody else and it bears poorly for the people. And then after that, one of the next major events we'll see is David's anointing as king, okay? We have a huge, huge change in the equation when our first king Saul dies and David steps up to the plate. He kind of, he both establishes God for a little bit, but he also sets the precedent of kings to be overly lavish, overly indulgent of their own poor, sinful nature. And then not only that, we will also have the falling apart of the monarchy, which is going to be under Solomon's son, Rehoboam, him, and then another guy named Jeroboam have a bit of a disagreement. There's a rebellion, an uprising that occurs. Jeroboam takes the north, Rehoboam takes the south. And so we see the division of the kingdom that was once united and great under David and Solomon into these two warring nations that don't get along, all right? You have Israel in the north, Judah in the south. And then finally, you will see the destruction of the northern kingdom and the captivity and then the return of the southern kingdom. So both kingdoms ultimately become annihilated and overtaken by other rulers throughout time. Israel doesn't really stand on its own for much longer after this period, before we enter into this cycle of being taken over, being released, being taken over, being released, all because of the sinful nature that they have. And that's what's going to be going on through the major and the minor prophets, with a few exceptions to the rule, like the fact that the book of Jonah doesn't actually deal with Israel. It deals with him and his unwillingness to go to Nineveh and the Assyrians. So when we're looking at all of this, I want you to keep in mind that there's a lot of major events, and Israel is shaped here, and it's really cool to see. It's really awesome to study and dig into, but I don't want you to judge these people too harshly. And the reason that I'm going to say this now is because when you read these historical books, and really any book in the Bible, obviously, I hope that you see yourself in the poor decisions that you make as well. However, I want you to understand that the same cycles these people are going to go through, many, many, even saved people today, go through these cycles, guys. It's the reality of still living with your flesh. Just because you're saved does not mean you're sinless. There's no way to achieve that. You are still in the old man, okay? You have to die and be fully redeemed before that is ever going to stop. So when you're looking at these books, appreciate them for what they are, learn from them, but do not have a tendency, don't have this mindset that you can point the finger and go, look at how terrible these people are, because reality is, at some point in your life, you are going to be these people. These historical books are about people, and you and I are people. So those are kind of the major events we're going to be looking at over this historical period. And just to kind of give you a major themes list, Joshua is all going to be about taking the promised land, okay? We're going to talk about that in just a second. Judges is going to be about a seven cycle period where Jerusalem, or where Israel and its people are terrible, awful. They get taken over. They need a deliverer. Terrible, awful, taken over, need a deliverer. And so on and so forth. And we'll talk about those cycles. Ruth is by far my favorite story. That book is it's a love story, really, and it's going to be not about love in the sense of modern American romanticism, but rather what love is at its core, which is selflessness, hard work, and a willingness to take care of somebody other than yourself. That's what love really is, guys, and we're going to talk about that when we get into Ruth. First and Second Samuel is going to be the early history of Israel. It's going to have the reign of Saul and David. During the time period of the Judges and into 1 Samuel, we see Samuel, obviously, hence the name, come on the scene, and he is a fantastic judge for the people. He is he's a type of Christ, and when I say type, I mean he's like an illustration of what Christ would be. He's not perfect, but he is by far one of my favorite people in the Old Testament. He comes to the stage, he takes very good care of the people, and then the people get this idea in their head that they want a king, and so Saul and David will come into power in that time, and then, of course, Samuel will die. And shortly after his death, Saul will die, and then David will ascend to the throne, and then we have, getting into 2 Samuel, of course, all of the time period of David's rule and all the evil mistakes that David makes that results in the sword never leaving his home. And then from there, we have 1 and 2 Kings. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles cover a lot of the same exact things. However, 1 and 2 Kings is a political history of Israel, okay? It's all the decisions these men made, alliances, enemies, this kind of stuff. Most of it's going to be focused on the reign of Solomon up to the captivity of the Jewish people under the Babylonians. 1 and 2 Chronicles, however, is going to cover a lot of periods of time from 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. And it is a religious history of Israel, okay? It's going to talk a lot more about the nature of the people than the nature of the kingdom. And then Ezra, we're going to have the return of the Jewish people from captivity in Babylon. Excuse me. And then Nehemiah, which is by far another one of my favorites, who is going to return under Babylonian rule to help rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. You're going to have Sinbalad and all these guys, these evil dudes that are trying to stop him from working. And they're going to be building a wall with one hand and holding a sword with the other. It's a very cool book. So we'll get into Nehemiah. And then, of course, the book of Esther, which is one of the most intriguing of the historical books. And it's going to be about God's care for his people, even under Gentile rule. Because Esther is going to help in maintaining, should be an influential piece, and making sure that the Jewish people are not eradicated while in captivity. So, that is my intro to historical books. Now let's get into Joshua, okay? So, Joshua obviously is about Joshua, okay? The one who is going to take Moses' place. As you know, Moses was not allowed to cross into the promised land due to his failure to keep his ego in check. He has this moment where the people have made him mad. He strikes the rock a second time instead of speaking with it, ruining the illustration that God was setting up about how the Son of Man would have to die once, but then after that, all you would have to do is ask for forgiveness of sin, okay? And he ruins this picture because they make him mad because they're very whiny. Like, I understand where Moses came from. I am a pastor. I understand why you might want to whack some people in the head from time to time. That is the nature of dealing with people. However, he ruins a very important picture to the people of the Messiah to come, even though I don't think they fully understood the picture that God was showing them. He still messed up that illustration, and not only did he mess up that illustration, he kind of took on the air of, he did this, he did this, he did this for the people, and God wanted to inform him that he had in fact not done any of those things. God had done those things. And so he's not allowed to cross into the promised land. He dies on a mountain looking at Canaan, and then God himself buries his body. And that's a very cool story. We'll get into that towards the when we get into, you know, Deuteronomy and all those areas. But so Joshua steps up to the table. He is going to be Moses's replacement. And so he comes into this, and all of his book is going to basically cover three campaigns. We're going to have a central campaign, which is Joshua and the Israelites invading the central part of Canaan to cut off any sort of potential unification that would be made by the people. And then from there, we get into the southern and northern campaign. But what's awesome about this book is even though Joshua is the leader, Joshua's name is Yahweh is Salvation, okay? And what that means is that God is salvation, okay? So while Joshua, yes, is leading the people, this is going to be a book about God taking care of his people, God conquering these Canaanites and giving his people a place to go. So as far as this book goes, the overview, obviously, the name says it all. It's about Joshua and his leadership of the people. Now, when we get into authorship, traditionally, everybody assigns Joshua to be the author. I would say that that makes perfectly good sense, seeing how it is a record of his life. However, not all of this book would have been written by Joshua because it records his death and burial. It also records Othniel's capture of Kirjath Sefer. And it also, there's a lot of times that the phrase "to this day" is used to in the end and to other areas of the life and the story of Joshua that indicates that there's a later time that this book was completed, okay, after his death. A lot of people believe that the book of Joshua was probably fully completed under the rulership of Saul in its earlier period. So, maybe, very likely, and not many people say this, but I'll say it because of the time period lives in, I am sure Joshua wrote a vast majority of the book of Joshua, but I would think that Samuel probably had a hand in completing the book of Joshua under the rulership of Saul. Once Saul took on the scene, Samuel had a lot of free time because he and Saul went their separate ways very early in Saul's rule. So that's my two cents. You can take it for what it's worth. Point is, the majority of the authorship of this book is by Joshua himself, which means you're getting firsthand information about what occurred during these campaigns. Now, as far as the date goes, I use the early date period. Remember, we talked about that in Exodus, about when that would have actually happened, I believe it happened earlier, not later. So the conquest, from my standpoint, my view of the date, would be at 1405 BC, and it's going to carry on until 1390 BC when Joshua dies. So we have a 15 years that we spend campaigning in Israel. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're like, well, wait a minute. Joshua just became, you know, the ruler. He just replaced Moses, and he only lives for 15 more years. Well, remember, he's a part of that original generation that was promised to all die off before entering into Canaan. He and Caleb were the only ones faithful enough. Therefore, God said, these two will go in, the rest of you will not. So Joshua's pretty old by the time he comes into a place of leadership. So him dying after only 15 years of being in the promised land, while it does seem like, well, darn, it's not unreasonable either. He lived a very good long life. And so he goes in and he helps with this taking over between 1405 and 1390. So we're going to have 15 years that we're going to cover in the book of Joshua. Now, awesomely enough, the book of Joshua divides very neatly into two sections, okay? The first off, we have chapters 1 through 12, which is the conquest, okay? And then 13 through 24 is assigning everybody their territory. So you have Israel as 12 tribes, and they're going to assign all of the land accordingly to these tribes. Now, the theme of conquest and occupation, that's really the big thing through the book of Joshua, okay? That is our theme. However, I would say the most important thing for you to remember about the book of Joshua is that this is about teaching the people they cannot conquer without God's help. You and I cannot achieve things in this life unless God allows it to happen. For example, in the book of Joshua, the first place we go to is Jericho. Jericho, God tells us what to do. We do exactly what God says. Walls come tumbling down. You know the story. We kill everybody. We win. Okay? But then shortly after that, they say, well, we won this one city, so we're going to do this city this way. They don't ask God about anything. They don't talk to God about what God says to do. And they try and do their own attack, and they fail miserably. Guys, it's the same way in our lives. When we work with God, we conquer. When we work with ourselves and push God to the side, when we push the wisdom and the foreknowledge of the great God that we have to the side, we are always going to ultimately fail. So the biggest theme, obviously, is going to be about the fact that God helps his people conquer. When you're working with God, you will conquer. And so kind of giving you a breakdown of this book, chapters 1 through chapter 6 is all about preparing Israel, okay? We're entering Canaan. We're getting everybody organized. We're talking about how this is going to go down. It happens at the Jordan River. It takes 1 month. 6 chapters of this book is 1 month of time. Then, chapter 6 through 13, we have the conquest of Canaan. So we're conquering Canaan. We are putting some of these people under subjection. And we obviously takes place in Canaan. And that's going to cover a period of 7 years. So 7 long years, we are at war against the Canaanites. Then chapter 13 through 14, we're going to have the settlement of East Jordan. And then 14 through 20, the settlement of West Jordan. And 20 through 22, the settlement of the religious community or the Levites. And then 22 through 24, which is going to be conditions for continued settlement. All of this is about dividing Canaan. So we have east of the Jordan River, west of the Jordan River. This is yours, this kind of thing. Settlement of the religious community, which is the Levites, who were given 48 cities. 6 of these cities were cities of refuge, and we're going to talk about that. And so they didn't actually get land. They got cities because their inheritance was God himself. They got to be in the presence of God continually, as opposed to living a regular secular life. And then these conditions are about, you need to finish conquering your spot. You need to finish conquering your spot. If y'all don't do what you're supposed to do, bad things will happen. This kind of discussion, okay? And what ends up happening is we have 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan and 9.5 tribes on the western side. And it takes us 8 years to get all of this established. So that's basically the book of Joshua in a nutshell, as far as the layout goes. So we're going to talk about all of Joshua's victories, how he runs his campaign from Gilgal, when he launches the southern and northern campaign. We're going to talk about the fact that all of his victories are when he's in alignment with God and what God wants. The settlement of the tribes, we're going to touch on it. I want you to understand that there is going to be a situation where these 2.5 tribes, they really want to stay on the east side of Jordan. They don't want to move into the west side, and what all that entails and how that was not the best of decisions. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk very specifically about how all the tribes settled. Just to give you a real quick thing, you have West Manasseh, East Manasseh. That's the half and half on either side that we just talked about. Then you have Gad and Reuben on the east side. And then you have Simeon, Judah, Dan, Benjamin, Ephraim, Issachar, Zebulun, Naphtali, and Asher on the west side. And strangely enough, Simeon is surrounded by Judah. Okay, that's kind of a interesting way that they are laid out. But so that is how this is going to take place. Now, one of the very important things we're going to look at is the establishment of the cities of refuge. As you remember, in Leviticus, we talked about the goal or the blood avenger, the man who was in charge of taking care of the family. These cities of refuge three on the west side, three on the east side of the Jordan River. These cities were very, very important because if you were out farming one day and your donkey got away with you on the tiller and ran the dude over that was working with you and killed him, the Blood Avenger's job was to kill the man responsible for the death of another person. However, in a city of refuge, you were given a trial. A priest would investigate what had occurred, and then if he ruled that it was indeed an accidental death, then that was the end of it. Because there was no charge, no capital punishment for accidental death. But if it was determined that it was homicide, then you were, of course, as the Blood Avenger, allowed to execute the man responsible. There was very little law in these wilderness areas other than that everybody was supposed to abide by Levitical law. But the enforcement, there wasn't really all that much. There was no official police for God, okay? And so these systems were established to not only make sure that justice was served in the instance of murder, but also that justice was preserved in the incident of an accident. So these cities are very, very important, and the six cities are Kadesh, Shechem, Hebron, Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan, okay? And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then finally, at the end of the book of Joshua, of course, Joshua is going to die. And he charges Israel, chapter 23 and 24. Everybody knows, especially since Christians put this on t-shirts and everything else, that, whatever you want to do, you can do. But as for me and my house, we will what? Say it with me. Serve the Lord. Okay? It has become such a commercialized verse that I feel like the poor thing is going to lose its power and authority because we slap it on a t-shirt and we walk around and pretend like we're going to do that while we are not living in accordance with the Lord and we're worshiping our own idols and self. And now I'm going to start preaching, so we're going to stop that. Okay? But this is the big hurrah that Joshua gives to the people about you got to do the right thing. Same discussion Moses had in Deuteronomy, Joshua has here in a much shorter version. He says, you've got to do what's right. You've got to do what's right. You've got to do what's right. If you don't do what's right, bad things will happen. And of course, as we know, moving into the book of Judges, they did not heed his words. So as we get into the book of Judges, I'm going to warn you, this is a very depressing book, okay? This is a book that's going to be about nothing but biting the hand that feeds you over and over and over again. And that's something that we as people, we don't like, right? If we help somebody out and we say, look, now you got to do this so that this never happens again, and then they turn around and do that, what's our thought process? We're like, well, I just helped you, and this is what you're going to do. But guys, that's what they do to God seven times. So in the book of Judges, very likely that the author is, of course, Samuel. And the name says it all. The book of Judges is about the time period of judges ruling over Israel, taking care of Israel, these mighty men that were raised up to deliver the Israelites from their punishment, from captivity under other nations. Okay? And so definitely written by Samuel. A lot of people will try to argue, no, it couldn't have been Samuel, blah, 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 blah. It was Samuel, guys. He is the end and the beginning of the two books that follow the book of Judges. It was Samuel, okay? I'm not going to get into that deep of it. There's a lot that goes into that. We're not going to get into that argument. However, what we do need to look at, though, is time period written and, of course, the range of time that we're covering in the book of Judges. So, obviously, the book of Judges was going to be written in the early days of there being a king, okay? Because there's a lot of times it says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Meaning when the book was written, there was a what? A king in Israel, okay? And there was more than likely that it was written before 1004 BC when David takes rulership of Jerusalem, okay? And what we have here is we have a period of 300 years, more or less, that are covered in the book of Judges that kind of overlap, okay? There's a lot of moving parts because we have a northern, southern, western, and eastern campaign, and those campaigns all occurred at different times. And when I say campaigns, I mean different judges. And there's some places that judges were in power at the same time that other judges were in power because the people were just so divided. The evil that was going on in Israel had really destroyed any sense of unity among the people. And so when we get into the book of Judges, we want to very carefully comb through how all of this happened. And some of it doesn't necessarily chronologically line up because of all these overlapping rulerships. The people of Israel were always in so much trouble and up to so much evil during this time period that you could have multiple deliverings happening at one time. So the theme and the literary structure of this book, we're going to have seven cycles. Okay, the theme is this: bad behavior, punishment, deliverance from punishment. Bad behavior, punishment, deliverance from punishment. And this happens seven times, okay? And so the picture is, these people go about doing wicked. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Okay, you're going to hear that phrase a lot in the book of Judges. And that happens. God allows somebody to take this individual group of Israelites over. And then there's a time period where they're under the thumb of somebody else. And then God raises up a deliverer, okay? And these deliverers, I want you to keep in mind, these are military men. These are not necessarily godly men. There's a lot of men that are famously known in the book of Judges, like I guess pastors thought at some point, well, he was an all right guy because he delivered Israel. Guys, Gideon's not a very good dude. Samson is not at all a very good dude. There's a lot of famous judges that have been movies made about them, you know. They're really not that great of people. They are strictly for freeing Israel. So please keep in mind, don't idolize these men too much. Just because they are a judge does not necessarily mean that they were a good guy, all right? And so to kind of give you an understanding of how this is going to happen, this is the events in chronological order of how they are written in the book of Judges, because the first and second chapter of Judges is about how the people cannot finish conquering the land because they're not focusing on God, they're not paying attention to God, and then they fall into this, well, we'll do whatever we want to do, an idolatry mindset. So starting in chapter 3 is really where these cycles take off. So Israel serves Cushan-Rishathaim, which is a bad dude, okay? He's got a cool name, but he's a bad guy. And they serve him for 8 years. God raises up Othniel to deliver them, which Othniel, he's a rock star. And for 40 years, they have peace under Othniel, okay? And then they do bad stuff, and they go into serving Moab, and they serve Moab for 18 years. And then God raises up Ehud, which is also a pretty decent dude, and he reigns over them for 80 years. Okay, 80 years they have peace under Ehud. And then at the same time, Shamgar delivers Israel from the Philistines, and that lasts for a grand total of a year. So we have a little bit of an overlap there. You have Ehud on one end, Shamgar on the other, and we'll go into those details when we get into the book. And then Israel, again, does bad and ends up under servitude to Canaan. and they are under Canaan for 20 years. And then Deborah and Barak, Barak's a little bit of a wimp, Deborah is a rock star, come in and they deliver the people, and for 40 years they have peace under Deborah and Barak. Then they do bad things, and Israel falls under Midian, and they're under Midian for 7 years. And Gideon, who is, he's all right. definitely not my favorite. When God finds him, he's hiding behind a wine cellar. He's kind of behind a well, and he's kind of a bit of a chicken. And he tests God and has very little faith in God. And then all of a sudden, he does this really good thing, and he frees the people. And then he does this really bad thing and makes his own copy of the high priestly garb, and basically creates a form of idolatry in the book of Judges. And we'll get into that. But anywho, we have 40 years of peace under Gideon, okay? And this is why I'm saying, understand, this does not mean spiritual revival, just peace, okay? A lot of times that these people do not make the correct decisions, and a lot of these military deliverers are strictly that. They're military men. Then, of course, Israel does what? Well, bad things, right? And there's a small time period where we're under Abimelech, who is king of Israel, and he's there for about 3 years. And then we have Tola's career, which is 23 years, Jair's career, which is 22 years. And these are just some little side stories. There's like 2 verses, 3 verses here. We don't get a lot of details, but Israel had done bad things, and then they had to step in. And then we have, again, Israel, misbehaving. They fall under Ammon and Philistia for 18 years, and Jephthah comes in, frees them for 6 years. And then we have Ibzan's career, which is 7 years long, Elon's career, which is 10 years, Abdon's career, which is 8 years. And again, these are like 1 verse, 2 verse, 1 verse, 2 verse, 1 verse, 2 verse, okay? The God's just like, and they did bad stuff in this guy, and the bad stuff in this guy, and bad stuff in this guy, okay? And then we have Israel under Philistia, okay? And that is a 40-year captivity, and that is when Samson comes to the plate to free them from the Philistines. And again, Samson is another one that he's not a great guy, guys. God can take and use anybody, and that's really what the point of the book of Judges is that God has the ability to take and to use anybody necessary to carry out his work. So we have a 350 years, 7 cycles, okay? And what's going to happen is we have the cause of the cycles, chapters 1 and 2. We have all of the cycles, chapters 3 through 17. And then the people go right back to it again. And chapters 17 through 21 is all about idolatry and morality and then civil war amongst the people, where they are living like the Canaanites who they took the land from. So that's kind of the outline of what's going to happen in the book of Judges. As I said before, keep in mind that Judges literally means military deliverers. They're not these great men of moral high ground that rise to the occasion. Some of them are great. You heard me say, this one's a rock star, right? So there's some of them that are really great. They're good, solid men, and then there's many of them that are not so much. They just do the job that they have. To give you an idea, Othniel, he defeats the Canaanites at Debir. He judges Israel. He delivers them from Cushan-Rishathaim. And we don't really know where that battle took place, but he did that. Really good guy. Deborah, who's a woman judge and also a prophetess, and Barak, who was her muscle. So about all he was good for. They subdue Canaanites, led by Jabin and Sisera, and at a fierce battle at the Kishon River, and really good guy. And then we have Jephthah, son of a harlot, who delivered Israel from the Ammonites. Gideon, who they all say is a mighty man of valor. Understand, mighty man of valor means he ended up being a good warrior. he ends up taking 300 goofballs and beating a Midianite force. That's kind of a very cool story. We'll talk about Gideon and his little army that God goes, oh, no, cut that back. And then Shamgar, who's kind of a minor judge, but Shamgar's he's a good dude. He kills 600 men with an ox goad, delivers the Israel from the Philistines. We're going to talk about him and just a few verses that are there about him. We have Ehud. He's the great-grandson of Benjamin. He delivers Israel from Eglon. This is our left-handed guy that stabs the king of Eglon, right? The big fat dude. And then we have Samson. He has very great physical strength. Not a whole lot of morality, that he collapses some buildings and kills quite a few Philistines and kind of a couple of foxes, too, burning a field down. So that is kind of an overview of the major judges' names. And like I said, we're going to talk about this much more in depth. There's a lot that goes on with these judges and the time periods that they rule, even the ones that only have one or two verses attributed to them in the Bible. There's a lot of secular history that kind of talks a little bit about these guys and what occurred during their time. But so with the book of Judges, you need to remember seven cycles: bad, punishment, deliverance, bad, punishment, deliverance. And this goes on for 350 years. For 350 years, there's this darkness in Israel, this evil time period. In fact, there's a part in the book of Judges that we're going to see where a supposed priest throws his wife to the people of a city and they rape her to death, and then he cuts her into little pieces and basically floats her down the river in the book of Judges, where he just goes out there and she's barely alive and he's like, oh, well, I don't really want to have to deal with you and carry you around, and he finishes her off. It's a very evil time in the history of Israel, guys. And there's going to be things, and this is why even today in this modern world, I hear Christians say all the time that, we're in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. The Lord's coming back. Things are getting ugly. Guys, things have not even gotten close to the evil that you're going to see in the book of Judges. I have never witnessed an entire city rape a woman, be dispatched by her husband, and then cut into pieces and floated down the river. Am I telling you that our world isn't evil? Oh, yes, there's a lot of evil and sin in our world. But we're not as bad yet as we could be, despite everything going on, which ought to make you quiver, that the human mind, the human nature, the evil that lurks within us outside of salvation with God and the revival of our spirit, guys, we're capable of much, much worse than what is going on right now. So the book of Judges is going to be a book that really, I hope, will open your eyes to the realities of human nature, what we are outside of the will of God, and the fact that even saved people, even those of you listening to this right now, we have the ability to fall into a cycle just like this in our lives. That if we're not careful, we'll sin, things will get bad, we'll turn to God, and then boom, here we go again. It is so important that you learn from these books. I know a lot of people go, oh, history. Oh, Lord have mercy. Why, Brother Zach, why do we have to talk about history? I hate history. Because, guys, history is recorded because if you do not know it, you are bound to repeat it. So, that is our intro to historical books, our overview of Joshua and Judges. Again, couple resources for you. I am not getting paid by these people. This is not an advertisement. They're just very good books and commentaries that I have come across in the last 9 years of being a preacher that are very solid. Nelson's Complete Book of Bible Maps and Charts, golden. Logos or Logos. I don't know which kind of Greek snob you are. If you are one, Logos, Logos, whichever you want to pronounce that Omicron on, okay? It's a little expensive, but it's a very good source too. Only need the little package. You don't need the big, huge, monstrous one. That's more books than you could ever read in your entire lifetime. But it's like $300 or $400 for just the base package. It's got very good commentaries, very good study charts on there. It helps you with the Greek and the Hebrew and a lot of these areas that we're going to be looking at, and a smidgen of Aramaic. And it will be very beneficial to you in helping you study the Bible even deeper, as well as making sure you get a good study Bible. You look over that book that I talked about, Grasping God's Word, which is about how to study. Those are all very, very good resources. And then, of course, this podcast is. So make sure to spend some time this week studying your Bible. This has been Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I hope you have a great week. We hope to release one more episode this week. Don't know if it'll happen or not, but if you're following this, you'll know about it. Tell your friends and get out of here and go study.